The RTE Rugby Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the RTE Rugby Podcast. I'm Michael Corcoran. In the next half hour or so, we'll be looking ahead to the Guinness Pro 12 final. And the Lions certainly will dominate our conversation, I'm sure. Munster and Scarlets in the Guinness Pro 12 final this coming Saturday. The Lions are in Carlton House, about to board a plane to New Zealand next Monday. We'll be hearing from their captain, Sam Warburton. And we'll also be hearing from the RFU's head of international talent, ID and development, Joe Lydon, as the union steps up its focus on overseas qualified Irish talent. But first, the Aviva Stadium on Saturday. I'm told there's going to be a sellout for the Guinness Pro 12 final between Scarlets and Munster. Well, Joe Stack has been chatting to the Munster outside half, Tyler Blendo.
Tyler, I think last year Munster were finished their season in early May. Good to be going right up until the final possible day this year, isn't it?
Yeah, look, we're absolutely excited about making the final and a big turnaround from last year, which, you know, it's on the back of a lot of hard work that the guys have put in. So look, we're really excited for the weekend to come.
It's been an emotional year, no doubt. The arrival of Rizzi. But can you put your finger on why there's been such a turnaround in one season?
Yeah, look, there's been a lot of things. The new management, the way they're encouraging us just to have a crack and not so much think about the consequence. And we're in one training facility now as well, which I think's definitely helped. And look, we went through a tough period last year and we put that behind us and we've just got down to back to basics of Munster and working hard, and it begins with that.
The last four of the Champions Cup, the last two in the Pro 12, how important is it that the year ends and all those efforts end with silverware?
Yeah, look, that's what we want. We want to win this comp. That's, you know, I think every team sets out to do that at the beginning of the year. And realistically, if you gave us a semi-final and a final in the two comps, we would have been ecstatic. And now that you make the final, there's a 50-50 chance up against a bloody good Scarlets team. So, look, we're excited to be there. We'll give it a good crack.
How surprised are you that it's Scarlets and not Leinster?
Look, Scarlets have been on an extraordinary run, and Leinster, again, is an amazing team. Had some good form, so it was a tough battle. We weren't picking the winner. It was a tough one, and Scarlets, I think, played extraordinary, and they deserve the win.
In his one season in charge, and with the strong backroom team that he has, can you sum up the influence of Rizzi over the past year? Can you put your finger on what he's brought to the place?
Yeah, look, I think he took his time when he got here, and he just learnt about the players and the staff that were here already. And he's just freed us up to do what we're good at. And I think you hear from Rizzi, you hear about Rizzi, and it says he brings the best out of players and his fellow management. So I think that's all it is, really, is allowing us to perform and do what we're good at on the field and under pressure.
How big a deal is it that Francis and Dunica will be playing their last game in a Munster jersey?
Yeah, it's massive, because we've enjoyed having them around, Francis the last few years and Dunica his whole life. And he's been outstanding for us this year, and Francis is, you know, he's been on some amazing form since Christmas. So we want to send them off in the best way possible, and we'll be doing our best this weekend.
Still plenty of talk of Axel this week and how much he would like you to go over that final hurdle.
Yeah, 100%. He's been there along with us the whole ride here, and we'd love to do it for him this weekend, and he'll be mentioned, I'm sure, but look, we just stick to what we've been doing the last few months as well.
Well, that was Tyler Blendon there chatting to Joe Stack earlier this week at the University of Limerick. Of course, Saturday evening, Guinness Pro 12 final, Munster against Scarlets. Very shortly we'll be hearing from Eddie O'Sullivan, but Wes Liddy joins me. It's going to be a huge occasion, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm surprised it's going to be a sellout, actually, when Leinster didn't get there, but great sign for the tournament to be able to bring 50,000 people to a fixture like that. So, yeah, should be an excellent big clash of styles, I suppose, as well. So, very interesting.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's tease that out. Eddie O'Sullivan joins us. Hi, Eddie.
Hi, boys. How you doing?
Very good. Listen, I suppose from a neutral point of view, this is not the final that a lot of people were expecting.
No, and I kind of flagged this before the semi-finals. I was worried that we kind of all assumed there would be an All-Ireland final. I wasn't sure who might get caught, to be honest with you. I just thought, you know, it was a bit idealistic that one of the Welsh teams wouldn't deliver a big performance on the day. And unfortunately for Leinster, it was the Scarlets who came to town and spoiled the party. But yeah, I'm not shocked that one of the Welsh teams have made it through. I suppose looking at the run in the form, Scarlets were the team that would worry you the most, because they put the best run together. And I think the fact that they caught Leinster on Friday night, I think Munster were well warned on Saturday, and they were never going to let that happen to them, you know. But yeah, a bit of a pity for Irish rugby. But look, I think you can't deny the Scarlets their right to be there. They've played great rugby on the run.
You've mentioned the Scarlets. What of Munster and their performance on Saturday? It was certainly workmanlike, wasn't it?
Well, it was like a Munster Cup rugby match, you know, from the old days when you didn't have much of the ball, maybe, but you didn't need it. I mean, I thought the defence was phenomenal. They completed most of their tackles, but I thought the intensity they brought, and it all came from their ability to stop the ruck ball that Ospreys needed. I mean, they were hugely influential at the ruck ball, so they just battered the hell out of Scarlets and Ospreys, and they couldn't get a quick ruck ball away, and that meant they kept playing off slow ball, and it was just grist to Munster's mill, and they just kind of shut them down basically. It wasn't the prettiest rugby match you've ever seen, but Pope Rugby isn't supposed to be pretty. It's about coming out the far side of it. And despite only having barely over 30% of possession in territory, Munster scored 20 points. And I don't think ever looked like losing the game. So I thought they brought the exact game plan that suited them, and they just choked the life out of Ospreys. And I don't think we'll see much different next Saturday.
Eddie, what did you make of the selection and, I suppose, the subsequent performance of Francis Ailey, especially in light of the fact that, you know, by hook or by crook, he's kind of missed out to Jaco Tauta in terms of staying on next season?
Well, actually, I was looking at it before the game and seeing him, you know, his last game for Munster before he was, leaving Thomond Park. Last game in front of the home faithful. I always thought he was going to have a monster game. Just, I suppose, part of it just laying on a marker that, look, you know, he wanted to stay in Munster probably. He was happy there. And, you know, he lost out, so he wanted to make a statement. And it doesn't no harm in terms of his agent going to somebody in another club and saying, look, I've got a fella for you here who's lit things up for Munster. So it was a great opportunity for him to leave a calling card on the way out the door. And he certainly did that. I always felt he was going to have a big game. He wanted to maybe leave Munster thinking at the end of it that maybe he was the wrong guy to let go. And he wanted to promote himself in terms of a contract somewhere else. So it was always on. He was going to have a big one. So I wasn't a bit surprised he delivered on the day.
Eddie, I was chatting to Steve Tandy after the match last Saturday in Thomond Park, and he said to me, you know, that he believes that Munster have the kind of game that can disrupt the Scarlets this coming weekend.
Well, I think they have. I mean, the Munster game has got them to this stage as a very, very Munster-style rugby, and it's produced by a very South African-style coach, and the actual logistics of how they play the game aren't too different. It's very aggressive, very in-your-face, a lot of one-off runners. And if they're successful in winning the collisions on both sides of the ball, like with them without it, they just choke you out of the game. Now, we're all smart enough to say that that's probably not going to win you a European Championship. We saw how they struggled against a Saracens team who were well able to cope with Munster's physicality. But it's not easy. It's easier said than done. And Pro 12 have struggled with Munster, and they have this reputation. When they get into your 22, they don't leave your 22 without scoring. And I think that will be their mantra next weekend. They will try and choke the life out of Scarlets, because what we saw from the Scarlets team against Leinster, and we've seen in the running, they can live off scraps. I mean, they had only 30-odd% possession and territory last week, and they outplayed Leinster. Now, Leinster have to take credit for their own demise as well. But what you see from Scarlets is they're a kind of team that can turn a half chance into 7 points. They don't need a lot of opportunities to hurt you. And I think Munster will have to be in their A game in terms of choking the life out of them and not giving them any half chances on the weekend to get the other side of them. And I think that will be the intriguing battle. Can Munster deny them any opportunities, because they don't need too many?
You almost get the sense, Eddie, with Scarlets, with the run of form they've put in the last 6-7 weeks, as you say, and the style of rugby they played it. You know, coming in as underdogs, they've massive momentum behind them now, and they seem even more dangerous now for that. And there is serious quality there in Liam Williams, Scott Williams, Jonathan Davies, right across that back line.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. They're in a great run of form. They love the underdog tag. They love coming to Dublin, to a neutral venue, not Thomond Park. You know, it won't be Thomond Park. No matter how many months supporters show up, it won't be Thomond Park. It'll still be Aviva Stadium. So they'll take all that under their wing, and they'll keep it nice and quiet, and they'll play themselves down with the belief that, you know, if they get 3 or 4 opportunities in the game on the weekend, and they're accurate, as we know they can be, it could be enough to get them across the line. I don't see them beating Munster if they win by more than maybe a score. But it's cup football, so that's all that matters. And I think they'll be quietly themselves talking this week about absorbing, you know, the pressure that Munster are going to bring and not panicking and waiting for their chance to strike, to counter-attack. It'd be a very contrasting style, because I think they know if they go toe-to-toe at Munster in terms of physicality, they're going to be in trouble. I think Munster bring massive physicality, and it's part of their DNA, it's part of what they do, and they thrive on it, you know. And I think Scarlets know that. They're a smart team. They'll know they'll have to box very clever on the weekend, but they won't have to land too many counter punches maybe to win the game. You know, three or four chances could do it for them. So they'll be quietly confident coming to Dublin. They won't play their hand very early. They won't say too much. But they are a dangerous crew to be playing against. And there's, I suppose, an expectation now that Munster, because their season, the way it's started up, that they've, you know, it's almost their destiny to win this. You know, the whole season, the way it turned around and the whole emotion and momentum around Anthony Foley's passing, that'll be all fed into Saturday. But this Scarlets team won't care a whit about that. They're there on a mission as well. They haven't got silverware for a long, long, long time. So they'll see this as a golden opportunity. And I think, yeah, it's a dangerous one for Munster because we all kind of assume that Munster will deliver this kind of hugely passionate performance and it'll just blow the Scarlets away. I don't think it's that simple.
Eddie, if you had your life savings in your pocket and you were walking into the bookies, who would you be putting your money on?
I still have it on Munster because I think they and themselves know. They'll know that what Scarlett's plan will be. I think everyone knows what Scarlett's plan is about where they can take it away from them, and I think that'll be their whole focus. They took it away from the Ospreys when the chips were down, and I think they'll do the same on the weekend. But look, it's a final, so my worry is that Scarlett's get a couple of breaks and they punish Munster. And I'm not sure Munster are the team that are great for coming from behind. They need to squeeze the life out of you and get in front of you and then give you no way back. If Scarlets were getting in front, I don't know if Munster could wear them down. That could be the problem. I'm still banking on Munster to get it done. I think their form has been good. They know what they're about. They won't change their game plan a whit from the semi-final. They'll try and repeat that in spades. And I think if they get that done, they'll win it. It'll be whichever team imposes its will on the game. And I would back Munster to get that done. But they've no room for error. Not as much room as people might think. They need to get everything right against Scarlets.
All right, that's Eddie O'Sullivan there chatting about Munster Scarlets at Saturday's Guinness Pro 12 final. The British and Irish Lions have been training in Carlton House all this week ahead of their upcoming tour to New Zealand. The squad are off this weekend before reconvening in London ahead of their departure on Monday. I've been getting a sense of the mood and expectation within the camp from the captain, Sam Warburton.
It's exciting. It's weird. It felt like it's miles away the New Zealand tour for quite a long time now, but now it's starting to feel a little bit more real. And it is literally just around the corner. So when we get back from this camp, we've literally got 2 days at home, which will be pretty much spending some time with the family before we head out for 6.5 weeks. So it's starting to feel like it's actually getting close now, and it's felt like a mile away, but now it's starting to feel pretty real with a lot of the squad in training. We can get a lot more done. So yeah, it's great that so many guys are together now, so it feels quite close now.
And when you compare and contrast last week to this week, I mean, last week, kind of slightly smaller numbers, all of a sudden it's kind of doubled up this week and not everybody's here yet?
Literally doubled up, which is me, you know, we can have full-on rugby sessions, you know, we can have competitive line-outs against each other, competitive scrums against each other, we can get a lot more out of training now, where last week was a little bit more kind of like mini-unit work, a little bit of clarity stuff, but we couldn't do too much competitive, obviously, because there weren't too many guys, but now, you know, we can run two teams against each other, attack and D, all sorts of the game, so it's a lot better for preparation, so... I guess it's disappointing that the guys, you know, would have got knocked out of their semi-finals, but then, you know, I'm sure it cheers you straight back up when you're off to pack your bag to go into Lions camp. So it's been a great feel so far this week.
And in terms of, you know, the amount of work that you have to get through, I mean, the time is pretty condensed, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, even today after training, you tell that's why a few of the boys are a bit late. Guys are staying back after training, working in their mini units, whether it's some plays off nine or whether it's some line-out work in your own pod or a little bit of scrum setups things. You know, boys are staying back and doing a little bit extra because you have got to try and get a bit more work in, perhaps in a two-week period where you normally have the luxury of perhaps a month or two. So guys are doing a little bit extra to make sure they get up to speed. But if anybody's going to pick it up, it's going to be these boys because they're obviously the best players around in Britain and Ireland. So if anybody can pick it up quick, then obviously these lads can.
And you're in a situation where you do have to cram, don't you? You've got to concentrate on yourself rather than the opposition, which is kind of slightly unusual.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people put a lot of emphasis onto the opposition, but I'm the sort of person where I always think, you know, you've got to control the controllables, and I've always thought with my game, I always think if I can do everything I want to do, I know I'm going to come out on top, and it's the same from a team perspective as well. You obviously have to pay respect to the opposition and look at particular starter plays. You might have a couple of key players that you might want to stop, but in general, a lot of it is about yourself and making sure you get your own game plan right. And that's been the focus for last week. It'll be the same for this week. And then when the games start rolling in, we'll start doing a little bit more analysis on opposition teams. But right now, it's making sure that we can put all our foundations in place and get as best prepared as possible.
And when you look around the team room, even the breakfast room this morning, and you kind of think, you're Sam Warburton, but you're the captain, and you look at the other people who are around there. I mean, it's a pretty privileged position to be in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think of myself as the captain. You know, I'm just one of the boys, and I just have the honour of doing it on match day. I mean, it's an absolute great privilege, but I mean, there's so many guys there with leadership qualities. It's a bit of a cliche, but you know, 41 guys can lead that team, and it's been that you can tell that in training already, because there's going to be parts of the game which aren't my specialist area, whether it's line out or scrum, where other guys are leading that, and they've been brilliant already so far. So already you can see that the guys have been picked. It's not because perhaps they're the best players, but they're the best people as well to have around, and is a good feeling already.
And a bit of banter already? I mean, there's a bit of slagging already going on between fellas?
There's been no sledging yet. I'm sure the boys will probably wait until there's a few beers down towards the end of the tour, but I'm sure there's stuff saved up from the lads against each other. I think it was quite even Stevens really in the Six Nations. We all could have beaten each other, so nobody's got massive bragging rights, to be fair. So I think England have him just after winning back-to-back Six Nations, but I think the Irish boys might play their card in the next few weeks too.
I get the impression that there's a huge air of excitement. I mean, a huge degree of anticipation as what's coming in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's been on players' radars probably since the World Cup. I always say rugby works in sort of two-year cycles at the top level. You go World Cup Lions, World Cup Lions, and even though players backhand it, you know, you are from the World Cup, your next long-term target then is to get on the Lions tour. Mm. So it's been 2 years waiting, really, and you know, players have been eager to get on the tour for a long, long time, which is why it's nice now that the announcement's out the way, first few sessions are out the way, and we just got the ball rolling and we can run with it now. So just really enjoy the rest of the tour.
So that was the Lions captain there, Sam Warburton. Eddie, given the fact that, you know, not just here in Ireland, but in England, you know, teams lost in semi-finals of competitions last weekend, is that going to alter the thinking or maybe the planning of Warren Gatland for the opening two games of this British and Irish Lions tour?
There was a hint that the guys who are tied up this week, if their clubs are kind of a little bit behind the curve on what the Lions are trying to do. So he may be leaning into thinking that the guys who are actually fan camping and won't will be freshest when they hit the ground in New Zealand, and they may be the guys that get the first run out, you know. But he's still going to figure out how to pick his best test side. And, you know, some of his best test players are still playing this weekend. So he really has to figure that out. But it may influence his thinking early in the tour. But I think he's got to figure out very quickly how to hone in on his best 15 and try and get those guys playing together as much as possible and keep them healthy. Because all that matters is what happens in the test series. But the path to the test series can really make or break the Lions.
I know everyone's a big fan, Eddie, but no more so than yourself. I know you rate Billy Vunipola massively, and you made the point to me in the past that he was absolutely crucial to the way the Lions might go about, I suppose, their game plan, and any chance they had of maybe being successful in this series revolved heavily around him.
Yeah, I think, look, he's a massive loss. I don't know if we can state, and you don't like hanging so much around one player's neck, but he's probably the one player that New Zealand would worry about in terms of trying to contain him. I mean, he just has that physicality and power that they would struggle to contain. I suppose if there's an upside to him being out, he's out now, and that the Lions have a chance to plan without him. He's certainly a loss, but there's a chance to plan without him. Like, let's say if he got injured the week before the first test, it could be really catastrophic. So they have a chance to circle the wagons, come another way around, but it does maybe adjust their thinking and how they go about it. And I think you can't overstate the loss he is to the Lions. And I think they just have to get on with it now. They need to park it and stop talking about it, because it isn't going to change. But it will be in the back of their minds, whether they care to admit it or not.
And they're running into the British and Irish Lions, that they're running into New Zealand teams who are in a really, really rich vein of form so far in Super Rugby.
Yeah, it's interesting if you compare the schedules from 2005 and now 2017. The schedules in 2005, there was 12 games on the tour, and some of the Wednesday games were really soft games. You know, Manawatu, I think the Lions scored over 100 points. So there was the Wednesday games were not that difficult. If you look at the schedule, it's 10 games, but there are no easy games. Possibly the easiest game is the first game against the Barbarians, but who knows how that will pan out. But all the other games are really full on. And I think the strategy New Zealand have taken this time is that they are going to wear the Lions out and try and basically have them as battered and beaten as they can have them when they serve their first test. I don't know if that's sinister in that. I just think they're going to play very, very physical rugby against the Lions. And all these guys, the Lions, are coming off the back of a long season. So if twice a week you take the Lions squad and you pound the hell out of them physically, And fellas are playing one-off games, a lot of them. They're not going to be in the test series, so they've nothing to lose. They're one-off occasions. It'll put massive physical pressure on the Lions. And if they're the other side of it, the psychological side of it, is that if they're successful, if they're picking off the Lions midweek or on the weekends by maybe 10, 15, 20 points, the psychology for the Lions then to be able to raise it for a test series against New Zealand's best becomes even more difficult. So there's a physical and there's a psychological dimension to it. And both of them are very hard hills to climb. But, I mean, I think for that reason, it's going to be a very difficult tour to win a test series in. Maybe nick a test, but to win two of the three is going to be a huge challenge.
It's often mentioned, Eddie, how everything at every level in New Zealand rugby is done to ultimately benefit the All Blacks. And certainly it seems that a lot of the Super Rugby teams, there's been a kind of a re-emphasis on the Maul and a lot of their breakdown work, that maybe there was a few flaws recognised on the November series last year, and they've kind of doubled down on that physical element to the game.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. The one thing you can say about New Zealand rugby is they have a fantastic ability to think as a nation on their feet and adjust their game. And once they decide on adjustment, everybody buys into it, like literally down to the mini rugby teams on the Saturday morning and the pitches. They all buy into whatever change and strategy that's been decided that suits the All Blacks. And I think, yeah, they have taken a step back after last November. They have reviewed the way they play. And I think everybody's bought into that. You can be sure that this whole Lions tour is being treated strategically by the whole of New Zealand. It's not like, you know, Steve Hansen come up with a plan to win the test series and the coach of the Hurricanes have his plan and the coach of the Blues has his plan. This is a strategic plan by New Zealand rugby and New Zealand as a nation to succeed over the Lions. So it's not a hit and miss. If they decided that all the super teams should be mauling more, then everybody gets on with it and does it, because it's a means to an end, and the end is beating the Lions. So people underestimate their ability to strategically work as a nation to make their rugby team the best rugby team in the world. And I think that's what keeps them at the top of their game. It's unbelievably efficient in how they drive their systems efficiently within the whole country. I don't know any other country that could probably achieve what they do in that dimension.
Well, the British and Irish Lions tour to New Zealand, they're heading off next Monday, and it certainly is going to make for a rather exciting 6 or 7 weeks ahead. The Irish Rugby Football Union recently announced details of a scheme called IQ Rugby, which will be responsible for the identification, development and management of overseas Irish qualified talent. The man heading that up is the former English Rugby League star, Joe Lydon.
One thing that is evident is that, you know, the Irish population are going out and populating the rest of the world, so including myself. So as having a grandfather from Galway, and knowing the number of people that are out there across the globe, not only in the UK, that are of Irish descent, means that there are probably more opportunities to find talent and develop talent that is Irish qualified to play rugby.
Now, you've done a pretty similar role with the Rugby Football Union and the Welsh Rugby Union before, so it's not as if you're new to this.
No, not at all. I've been involved now in professional sport for 35 years, so either as a player, as a coach, or as somebody developing and working with players, talented players. So thoroughly enjoy it. I like to think that I understand it a little bit, but there's always surprises every day. But no, it's a little bit of a drive and a passion to identify and work with good young athletes to get them through to being hopefully fulfilling that potential we talked about. And again, there's so many that want to and are able to play and are qualified to play for Ireland. Then it should be pleasurable, but also interesting.
And even from a practical point of view, how exactly will this work? I mean, it's not as if you're just going to identify someone and say, here, you head off to Galway and play for Connacht. I mean, there are other practical things you can do for to help people develop as human beings.
Oh yeah, well, I think we'll have, again, once we know the potential of the individual and making sure that they are qualified. So they're qualified through birth, through their parents or through their grandparents. So making sure that we're compliant with World Rugby regulations, and also most importantly that the individual wants to play for or in Ireland. So once we've done that and we've assessed their potential, then it's providing support networks and opportunities. So having individual player plans for these for this talent and making sure that we can maximise that potential, providing opportunities whether that's overseas or whether it's as part of the professional rugby pathway here in Ireland. So it's making sure that we have a bespoke plan. We also want to make sure that we are complementing the programmes and the support networks that are out there, like the UK Irish Exiles, but also making sure that it's holistic development, so education, life after sport. It's a very, very small career as far as time scales. You know, you could be lucky enough to do 12 or 14 years in the sport. You could also be unlucky and it could be weeks and months. Mm. So we want to make sure that there's life after sport as well. So catering for that at the beginning makes it a lot easier when your career is finished.
Is this just confined to the UK, or is this kind of worldwide, so to speak?
No, it's worldwide. Obviously, we want to go to hotbeds that we know have both Irish qualified talent, but also rugby talent. So, yes, by all means, once the IQ Rugby brand is known further afield, then it will be, we will hope, people would come to us as well. But we'll be going to the hotspots that we know. We'll be going to the UK, working with the players, working with the clubs and the unions to make sure that we're being open and transparent about this, but also trying to find and work with talent, whether that's come from rugby or from other sports and other walks of life. We'll start off in the hotspots we know, but we'll also try and grow it to make sure that the awareness is there, that if somebody was Irish qualified from around the globe and wanted to come and try, make sure they had an opportunity within Ireland, then we'd certainly cater for it.
And do you see that you're almost in competition, for want of a better phrase, with, say, if you go to Birmingham or London or someone and there's somebody there you want to talk to who's Irish qualified, but he was born in England, I mean, is there almost like a competition between you and the Rugby Football Union to get this individual to decide that he wants to join his lot with Ireland?
Yeah, I think there is competition, but I think that's good. It's healthy. As long as it's positive competition. It's like the players themselves. You know, we want more players playing and vying for positions within the Irish provinces and within Ireland, and it's the same with the competition with other unions who are doing exactly the same as us. This is a profession we're talking about, you know, this is a job, so it's got to be competitive. But I think that's actually a good thing. It's a healthy thing, because it'll actually put peer pressure on ourselves. It'll make us work harder to support these players, these athletes, these individuals, and it should also do the same for the other unions as well. So I'm not opposed to competition. I think actually it's one of the factors that stands us apart to make sure that we are a team sport that develops good people.
Now, there is a structure there already at the moment. Obviously, you've mentioned the Irish Exiles, that's there. So I mean, this is to complement and support what's there in a kind of more structured way.
Most definitely. They've been, you know, the Irish Exiles have done a great job for so long. Their network is strong in the UK and wider. Globally, whenever we go anywhere now and we start to talk about IQ Rugby, we talk about, you know, people say how they know and respect the Irish Exiles, and rugby in Ireland as well. So we want to complement those processes, those systems and those networks. We want to work with them and make them stronger. We'll be adding additional resources to make sure that they are stronger and are developed. And we'll be refining as well as we go. So we'll be looking at players that are identified through those existing systems and hopefully providing more opportunity and more support.
And one person who has come through a system maybe not too dissimilar in the past is going to be working with you, Kevin Mikes.
Yeah, Kevin has been over in the UK playing his professional rugby for a number of years now, you know, playing with the likes of Bristol, etc., and then more recently coaching him in Birmingham to make with Moseley for the last 7 years now. So Kevin, 70 caps for Ireland. Fantastic person, a great experience in Irish rugby, but also a great person to work with. His knowledge and his experience of the UK talent pathways is as good as anybody I know, and also his passion for developing individuals now within his coaching and making it more focused regarding the Ireland pathway will be something that we can really draw down on and make work and help complement our systems.
Now, I know it's in its infancy, but what sort of a database are you working off at the moment? I assume it's, even as we're standing here, it's probably getting bigger back in your office.
It's getting bigger by the day. It's already strong. Again, you'll know that, you know, Ireland has got the highest percentage of population living outside the country, and every year that database, and every day that database grows stronger once we start identifying players, and it'll get bigger and bigger as we identify athletes from other sports, but also making sure that we know those athletes around the world that are Irish qualified and who want to play for Ireland or in Ireland. So yeah, it's big, but it's going to get bigger.
And how will you measure success of this?
Success for me is making sure that we have got when Joe Smith and the Irish coaches sit down, we have got people in front of them that can complement and put a little bit more tension, that competition you talked about. It'll add to the depth of players that he and the provinces have to select from. We'll hopefully be able to fill a few gaps as well, but success for me is having individuals that are better players and enjoy being part of the sport that we play.
And we have the Lydons from the West of Ireland to thank for you standing in front of me today.
We do, grandparents from Galway, from Utrad. So yes, a little bit of family history to thank, and a little bit of luck as well. You know, after, as I say, 35 years in professional sport, ended up having a great job with the Irish Rugby Football Union.
Now, I mean, on a serious note, because you've done a similar job in all the unions, you're well aware of the challenge that's ahead. In one respect, it's almost a bigger one, given the fact that there's so many Irish people living outside the country.
Yeah, but again, that's good. This is not going to be a boring job by any stretch of the imagination. It'll have its challenges, but it'll have great rewards as well, because, again, working with individuals and groups, teams, squads, and trying to maximise potential and opportunity is a fantastic job to be in. And again, the people that are involved already, making sure that we work together to complement existing processes, systems, and hopefully fulfilling potential.
That was the former English Rugby League star Joe Lydon, who's now got the responsibility to identify, develop and manage overseas Irish qualified talent. Seems like a good idea, Eddie.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a huge diaspora of Irish people out there, you know, across the world. I mean, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, America is a huge area that we've never really looked at. And obviously England is the closest. And we have, years ago, we had the Exiles, which was the fifth province. People like Simon Gagan, Jim Staples, Dave Curtis, John O'Driscoll came from across the water and played for Ireland. And there's always been that Exiles network going on in England, but never really formalised, particularly since the Exiles was disbanded as a province when the game went professional. But yeah, it's fairly fertile ground if you can get your network working very well. And it's interesting to hear if you know formalise it. It was always kind of done below the radar, but it's obviously something now they're taking a look at, probably been driven by David Nusafora. It would be interesting though to see how far they spread their wings beyond England in particular, where we've always had a kind of a good networker there. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes beyond that.
I suppose we saw a little hint of it with this, you know, partnership with Notre Dame in whatever form that's taken as well, Eddie. But as you say, it's a very hard one to wrap your hands around the full extent of the possibilities when you're talking about dealing with numbers in the tens of millions some places. It's a very different proposition than being pointed to a specific rugby player of 20 years of age that may not make it for England and has an Irish grandmother.
Yeah, it's a very broad pyramid, really. And for every 1,000 players you engage with, you know, you might get one to come through professionally, and then how many of those professionals make it to international level, which is the ultimate goal. And the amount of work that goes in to weaving your way through that broad pyramid of numbers is colossal. And you're right, there's tens of thousands of people and of kids in America who have Irish heritage who may be engaged in rugby, may not, but have the potential to play it. It's not probably as big in other countries, but it's still a labyrinth. You're also, remember, if they are good players or they have potential, that country itself is probably vying to have them. You know, if there's a good rugby player in England, who has Irish heritage, and he's good enough, the RFU are probably onto him. He's probably in the RFU system. The same in South Africa or New Zealand. You know, if he's Irish heritage, which is a really good player, they probably have them in their system already. So you're almost trying to maybe pry them out of the system that they're in already. So it's a good concept, but there's a lot of work in it. And for every one player you get, there's a massive amount of effort goes into it. And it's a slow burn thing as well. I think people have to remember that because the RFU announced this, you know, last week, that we're going to have suddenly five fellas playing for Ireland that came from outside Ireland but have Irish heritage in the next year or two. It's not going to work like that. It's going to be a slow burn thing. It's going to take time and it's going to take a lot of work.
When you look at a player, say, for example, Eddie, like Ulster's Kieran Treadwell, I mean, he's a perfect example of somebody who has, you know, grown up somewhere else and now he's slotted into the Irish system. I mean, there must be, surely, many people like him, not just in England, but further afield as well.
No, there's no doubt about it that the numbers are out there, Michael. It's just how you track them down and how you get your hands on them. That's the big effort. And it's really about networking and it's really about doing research and doing due diligence on players. Because if you're going to invest in a player, you have to believe there's a fairly high percentage that the player will come through, because it's an expensive thing to invest in as well. The time and energy goes into it, even when you get the player in the system. Like, so, you know, it's something that's worth doing, but you need to do it really, really well to get it to pay its way. It's not just about throwing a net out and pulling in everybody and then, you know, see what happens. It's a lot more complex than that. But there's no doubt that, you know, if Ireland were to produce over every, you know, take a four-year World Cup cycle as an example, if you were to produce, like, even two players that came from outside Ireland with Irish heritage but ended up playing for Ireland in the World Cup, that, to me, would be phenomenal return on the investment in their time.
I guess the fact that, you know, a fellow like Kevin Maggs is actively involved in this as well, I mean, he's the prime example of the type of person that they're looking for.
Yeah, you have Kevin Maggs and the same vintage with Rod Henderson, who came to the game through grandparent heritage. So they're exactly the guys. But those guys were almost found, I suppose, you know, a bit hit and miss. It was the exiles community that spotted them, saw the potential in them and connected them. And even though they still played their game, their rugby in England, they were very Irish, and about as Irish as you get. I remember Kevin Maggs played in Bath all his career, but when Ireland won a game, he used to show up, particularly if they beat England, he'd show up in Bath on a Monday morning in an Irish tracksuit, you know, just to rub it in. So, like those guys, when you get them in, they're as Irish as anybody else, and they are committed to the cause. And, you know, to me, it might be a bit of not the most PC thing to say, but in some ways, I think those guys are better to find than maybe somebody coming and doing a residency, you know. And they have more of a connection with Ireland. And that's not to take away from the guys who do their residency. And I'm glad that law's been adjusted to 5 years, to be honest. I think everyone agrees with that. But the guys who have Irish heritage believe they're Irish. And there's a big plus in that as well, I think. We shouldn't ignore that as a factor in it.
All right, listen, we're going to leave it there, let you go. Eddie, thanks. Good to talk to you as always. That's the former Ireland coach, Eddie O'Sullivan there. Well, that's it from us for this week. There'll be more from the podcast in the coming weeks as the British and Irish Lions tour comes to RTE Radio Sport. Details of our coverage will come up pretty shortly. But thanks for listening. From myself, Michael Corcoran and Wes Liddy, talk to you soon.
The RTE Rugby Podcast.